Now, the first and very one of the most important articles, the first thing we're going to deal with this evening is one of the most important articles, I should say, in the Houston Post series about the CIA connections to the SNL crisis. Research credit for the following article goes once again to that diligent listener of ours whom I have nicknamed our Savings and Loan Ranger. He has been forwarding to us all of the articles from the Houston Post done by Pete Bruton, their excellent investigative reporter. And this particular story comes to us from the Houston Post of Wednesday, April 4th of 1990. Once again, it's by Pete Bruton, B-R-E-W-T-O-N, of the Houston Post. Once again, copyright 1990 by the Houston Post. Houston-owned, Texas-proud, as they proclaim themselves. And this article is headlined, Attorney Links to SNL Crisis Has Ties to CIA and Mafia Figures. Now, the main names to keep in mind here are Frank Corson, C-O-R-S-O-N, reputed CIA operative, a person involved with basically he owned the now failed Vision Savings and Loan, one of the institutions that went down, and we're going to take a look at one of the loans that helped that and another savings and loan go down, and a fellow named Lawrence Freeman. He was tied to this land deal, along with a fellow named Adkinson. He is tied to the CIA. And Freeman's two main connections here are Paul Helliwell, an OSS and CIA operative, the OSS being the United States' World War II intelligence service, and Helliwell then went to work for the CIA, one of the major CIA figures involved with both organized crime and the drug traffic, two things that are always, or have for a long time, been very closely affiliated with the CIA and our other intelligence services. The other name is Santo Trafficante Jr., a key organized crime operative in the United States, also a person very closely affiliated with the CIA and many of its efforts. Santo Trafficante Jr., also, although now deceased, was a key to one of the defendants named in the Christic Institute's original suit. It was filed in the summer of 1986. So those are the main names here. Frank Corson, one of the people involved with the Silverado orbit that we looked at last week and that we'll be coming back to this week. And again, the connections there are just so involved and dizzying that I'm not even going to try and describe those. It's tough enough to remember the names, Walters Good, Mizell, Brownstein, and Neil Bush. And in turn, remember Henry K. Beebe, Corson, G. Wayne Reeder. Now, this fellow Freeman is tied to Corson. Corson, in turn, tied to the Vision Bank and a lot of other connections. We took a look at Corson not only in connection with the March 11th article from the Houston Post about the Silverado failure. We also took a look at an article from February 4th, specifically about Corson and Lawrence Freeman. Lawrence Freeman is the attorney who is referred to here. Attorney linked to SNL crisis has ties to CIA and mafia figures. It reads in part as follows. A Florida land deal that caused savings and loans in Texas and Pennsylvania to lose more than $50 million was engineered by a Miami lawyer who laundered money for the mafia and had ties to a prominent CIA official, the Houston Post has learned. The lawyer, convicted money launderer Lawrence Freeman, F-R-E-E-M-A-N, had long-standing relationships with the late notorious mafia boss Santo Trafficante Jr. and to the late Paul Helliwell, last name H-E-L-L-I-W-E-L-L. A founding member of the CIA, Helliwell participated in many covert operations, including efforts to overthrow Cuban dictator Fidel Castro. Freeman's links to Trafficante and Helliwell and to other mob associates and CIA operatives raise questions about possible involvement by the CIA and organized crime in the nation's savings and loan crisis. Reached by phone at his Miami office, where he said he works as a consultant, Freeman did not deny working for the CIA. Asked if he ever worked for the CIA, he first replied, I don't know, quote-unquote, and then he said, no comment, quote-unquote. Freeman's CIA and organized crime connections were discovered by the Post during an ongoing investigation into the role of fraud in the nation's savings and loan crisis. The Post has found evidence suggesting links between the CIA and organized crime and the failure of at least 25 federally insured financial institutions. The evidence uncovered by the Post suggests that the CIA may have used part of the proceeds from SNL fraud to help pay for covert activities that Congress was unwilling to support publicly. A source close to an ongoing federal investigation of SNL failures told the Post that some of the money from the Florida land deal may have been diverted for use in CIA-sponsored covert operations. One of the principals of the transaction is said to have arranged the sale of weapons to Iraq in the early 1980s. A House Banking Subcommittee has found evidence supporting some of the Post's findings and has asked the House Intelligence Committee to investigate. The committee is conducting a preliminary inquiry. The Florida land deal was a major factor in the failure of Vision Bank Savings in Kingsville, Texas, and Hill Financial Savings in Red Hill, Pennsylvania. The Post has previously reported on other evidence linking Vision Bank to organized crime and alleged CIA operatives, and linking Hill Financial to organized crime. About $7 million of the $20 million that Vision Bank lent on the Florida deal was wired to a company in the English Channel tax haven Isle of Jersey. The officers of this company were also used by Freeman to launder drug smuggling proceeds. Freeman is a business associate of noted Chicago tax attorney Burton Cantor, K-A-N-T-E-R. Freeman, Cantor, and Helliwell all worked with the Castle Bank and Trust in the Bahamas during the early 1970s, when it was used by the CIA and organized crime to launder money. In the Florida transaction, Freeman drew up the original sales contract for a company called Panhandle Coast Investments to buy more than 20,000 acres from St. Jill Paper Company. Freeman was the registered agent of Panhandle Coast Investments, and his legal assistant was the president. After Freeman was indicted in November of 1985 on charges of laundering money for a convicted drug smuggler, he dropped out of the Florida transaction. Freeman pleaded guilty in February of 1989 and was sentenced to 3 years in prison. He is now out of prison on parole but is barred from practicing law. A company headed by Houston developer Mike Adkinson replaced Panhandle Coast Investments in the sale, although several people close to the matter, including the head of St. Joe Paper Company, believe that Freeman had been fronting for Adkinson from the beginning. Adkinson was a friend and business associate of Houston developer Robert Corson, C-O-R-S-O-N, an alleged CIA operative who owned Vision Bank Savings. Vision Bank lent about $20 million, more than 20% of its total assets, on the 1986 Florida land deal, and ended up losing about $17 million on the transaction. Federal regulators say the deal was the principal cause of the SNL's demise. A source close to a group of investors from Kuwait who had done business with Adkinson said Adkinson was involved in international arms dealing. The source said Adkinson participated with another group of Kuwaitis in arranging for the sale of weapons to Iraq in the early 1980s. Corson, who has been barred from involvement in federally insured financial institutions, is the subject of two federal investigations into SNL fraud, including one involving the Florida land deal. Federal investigators in Pennsylvania are also looking into the Florida transaction because Hill Financial lent $80 million to complete the deal. Investigators estimate that Hill Financial lost more than $40 million on that loan. Freeman's connections to the CIA go back to the late 1960s when he met Helliwell. Helliwell was a top officer in Southeast Asia in World War II with the OSS, the predecessor to the CIA. Helliwell left the CIA in the early 1950s and became a prominent Miami lawyer. But he continued to work for the CIA and was involved in activities such as the sale of weapons to anti-communist forces in Southeast Asia. He also organized Castle Bank and Trust in the Bahamas, the tax haven bank used by the CIA in organized crime to launder money. Skipping down in the article, Freeman testified that he joined Helliwell's Miami law firm in January of 1970 and worked there until June of 1970, when he left to become the in-house counsel and assistant secretary at Castle Bank and Trust in Nassau. Freeman told the Denver Court he stayed at Castle Bank from July of 1970 to November of 1971 when he rejoined Helliwell's firm. He testified that he left Helliwell's firm in May of 1972 to form his own law firm. Skipping down once again. Several federal investigators believe that after Helliwell died in 1976 and Castle Bank folded the following year, the CIA and organized crime moved some of their money laundering operations from the Caribbean to the British Channel Islands. On the Isle of Jersey, one of these tax haven islands, Freeman was caught laundering drug money for convicted drug smugglers Jack DeVoe, capital D-E, capital V-O-E, and Profula Mundol, M-O-N-D-O-L. This is also where Lamar Savings in Austin, Continental Savings in Houston, and Division Bank Savings wired more than $60 million in federally insured deposits on two Adkinson land deals, including the Florida land transaction in question here in 1986 and the ill-fated Meyerland Shopping Center deal in Houston. The infamous Nugenhan Bank in Australia, which was used by CIA operatives and mafia associates to launder drug trafficking proceeds, was considered by some, including journalist Jonathan Quitney, who wrote the book The Crimes of Patriots, also to have taken over where Castle Bank left off. Another bank in Nassau that had connections both to Castle Bank and Nugenhan Bank was the Bank of Nova Scotia. According to Florida Department of Law Enforcement reports on Freeman and DeVoe, most of the principals of the Jersey Island Trust companies with which Freeman and Atkinson were dealing had previously worked at the Bank of Nova Scotia in Nassau. One of these Jersey Island Trust officers, Raymond Harvey, wired Freeman an inquiry in 1983 about setting up trusts to handle a Texas land development for European investors. Harvey's companies were used by DeVoe and Freeman to launder drug money and by Atkinson and Corson to funnel S&L money out of Texas. Seven Texas banks and S&Ls, including Corson's Vision Bank, lent Atkinson's company more than $100 million to buy the Meyerland Shopping Center, which was estimated to be worth no more than $30 million. More than $30 million of the money lent to Atkinson was wired to Jersey Island companies tied to Harvey. These same companies got more than $7 million of the Vision Bank funds lent on the Florida deal. Florida Department of Law Enforcement records state that one of Freeman's biggest money laundering clients was an organized crime figure in Florida referred to by Freeman and his associates as, quote, the Cobra, unquote. Convicted drug smuggler Jack DeVoe and his partners told Florida investigators that Freeman had told them he would launder their cash by giving it to the Cobra and then transferring money from the Cobra's Bahamas bank account to their offshore account. One of the convicted drug dealers that Freeman dealt with told Florida Department of Law Enforcement investigators that the Cobra was a prominent organized crime figure, possibly from the Tampa area, unquote. Sources in Florida and Texas told the Post that the Cobra was Florida Mafia boss Santo Traficante Jr. of Tampa, who died in 1987. One source who has seen confidential Florida law enforcement records told the Post that these records identify Traficante as the Cobra. Traficante was involved in an abortive effort by the CIA to use the Mafia to try to assassinate Cuban dictator Fidel Castro in the early 1960s. Traficante was also involved with Halliwell and other anti-Castro activities in the early 1960s. Traficante's closest organized crime associate was New Orleans Mafia boss Carlos Marcello, a reputed associate of Herman K. Beebe Sr. of Shreveport, Louisiana. Beebe, who has been convicted of bank fraud, controlled or borrowed money from more than a dozen failed S&Ls in Texas. Well, remember Herman K. Beebe. We're going to be coming back to him in the context of our discussion of Southmark in just a minute. Now, let me go back here, and I'm going to briefly sketch out the relationships between the key names here. Now, Lawrence Freeman, recall, is a former law partner of Paul Halliwell. Paul Halliwell, a key OSS operative, then a key CIA operative, heavily involved both with the CIA after his retirement as well as organized crime, a key veteran of the anti-Castro activities. And remember now, Lawrence Freeman is one of his law partners. Lawrence Freeman also becomes a chief counsel for the Castle Bank, a major Halliwell creation, the Castle Bank used for laundering both CIA and Mafia money, and indeed laundering money that both the CIA and Mafia were involved with together, as they often are. By the way, Radio Free America shows 24 through 29 go into some of these connections. We also looked at the Castle Bank, by the way, in connection with Radio Free America number 28, dealing with the CIA and LSD. William Mellon Hitchcock laundered some of the Timothy Leary's Brotherhood of Love, Brotherhood of Eternal Love funds through the Castle Bank, and we looked at the connections of a number of CIA operatives, notably Ronald Stark, to the Brotherhood of Eternal Love. That same Castle Bank is the Castle Bank in question here. So Halliwell starts Castle. One of his business partners is Lawrence Freeman. Halliwell, key CIA, we'll look at him in a second. Lawrence Freeman is a law partner of his and becomes a counsel for Castle Bank. Lawrence Freeman also involved in this particular land deal, which helps bring down Hill Savings of Pennsylvania, and also a Vision Bank of Texas, Vision Bank owned by reputed CIA operative Frank Corson, a member of the Silverado Orbit, as we looked at last week, or in our last installment, I should say. Now, one of the key names in this particular land deal is a fellow named Atkinson, who reportedly used some of the money on this land deal to finance weapons shipments to Iraq. Also, now, we come across the name of Santos Trafficante Jr. Santos Trafficante Jr. was one of the original defendants in the Christic Institute's lawsuit, also a key member of the Lansky operation. We've taken a look at Santos Trafficante Jr. in connection with the Guns of November Part 1. He was one of the key organized crime elements in the assassination of President Kennedy. There were many organized crime elements involved in it, although, contrary to what some researchers have maintained, they were not the only or even the main element. But Santos Trafficante Jr. was one of the key organized crime people involved in the assassination of President Kennedy, and was one of the people that the House Select Committee on Assassinations recommended that the Justice Department investigate, as badly compromised as that investigation was. And, of course, Santos Trafficante, again, was a key veteran of the anti-Castro efforts of the CIA of the early 1960s. Also, again, one of the defendants in the Christic Institute suit. He died as the Iran-Contra scandal was breaking. He was an old man at the time, but his family was unusually tight-lipped about the situation. Santos Trafficante Jr. also discussed in Radio Free America Show 24, 26, 29, and 33 as well, for people who want to go into the archives. Now, the main name here, and a person that we're going to be looking at, bear in mind that there are connections between other people involved with the Christic suit and some of the Iran-Contra or apparent Iran-Contra-related elements in the CIA SNL connection. We took a look at the Sunshine State Bank of Rafael and Ray Corona and how that helped bring down the People's Savings and Loan of Llano, Texas. Harold White, the son of a Reagan supporter, Armour White, and a director of Sunshine Bank, had a loan which helped bring down People's Savings and Loan. Ray Corona himself borrowed money from People's Savings and Loan, although that loan didn't bring down the bank. Now, Sunshine State Bank, founded with drug money from a fellow named Tony Fernandez, an unindicted co-conspirator in that drug deal was Frank Castro. Frank Castro, a CIA anti-Castro operative, veteran, a member of the Carew crowd that we've looked at in so many of our broadcasts, George Bush, head of the CIA when it, among other institutions, helped out Carew, an anti-Castro terrorist organization, perhaps best known for the assassination of Orlando Letelier, which is coming up, which is under investigation once again these days, in April of 1990. Now, Frank Castro, an admitted and enthusiastic supporter of the Contra effort, also an associate in that Contra effort of two fellows named Moises Nunez and Francisco Chanez, both of them defendants in the Christic Institute's lawsuit, and both of them also involved, the two key names involved with Frigoríficos de Punta Arenas, named both in the Christic suit and in the Kerry subcommittee's badly compromised report as a key element involved with drug smuggling, as well as probably the Contra support effort as well. Whether or not Frank Castro was involved with that remains to be determined, but those are some other hard connections, as well as, of course, the ITSCO connections and the Global International Airways connections to Messrs. Shackley and Kleins, two of the other Christic defendants, and they crop up in connection with Global International Airways and Air Azima, and Mario Renda also a key player there. But those are some other Christic defendants who crop up in connection with the CIA-SNL scandal. Now, we're going to take a look at the connections here between Paul Helliwell and the Castle Bank, and one of the questions I think we might want to ask here is that if, in fact, Jonathan Quitney is correct about the Castle Bank having picked up, or the Nugan Hand Bank, rather, having picked up where the Castle Bank left off, one of the questions we might want to ask is whether the SNLs picked up where the Castle Bank left off, or where the Nugan Hand Bank left off, I should say. If Nugan Hand succeeds Castle, have, in fact, some of the SNLs, as well as other financial institutions, succeeded the Nugan Hand when it went down in 1980. That perhaps might be the central question we want to be asking in connection with this whole situation. However, we're going to take a look now at Paul Helliwell, and we're going to do so not only to find out more about him, because he's a key player here with Lawrence Freeman, again an associate of Robert Corson, part of the Silverado orbit that we looked at. Paul Helliwell, in a very real sense, could be viewed as sort of a microcosm, and in the story of his associates, including the Castle Bank here, a CIA and organized crime money laundering institution. We are going to look at, in a brief way, the relationships, the historical relationships, which have brought us to the situation we're at now. Now, in Radio Free America number 24, which we're going to be repeating in weeks to come, we took a look at the interrelationship between organized crime and U.S. intelligence, and how, in turn, this particular interrelationship has led to the involvement of our national security establishment with the drug trade. That is one of the things we're going to be looking at now in connection with Paul Helliwell, and we're going to take a look at the career of Paul Helliwell, his involvement with the Castle Bank, and again, counsel for the Castle Bank, as well as law partner of Helliwell, Lawrence Freeman, the subject of the article we just looked at, and Lawrence Freeman tied to the failure of the Vision Bank, a savings and loan in Texas, owned by Frank Corson, also tied to the failure of Hill Financial in Pennsylvania. In order to cover the career of Paul Helliwell, we're going to be taking a look at information from a book we've looked at in the past. It's an excellent book. Tragically, the author has left us. She died of cancer at the age of 49. Whether or not it was a natural cancer, and God knows there's plenty of those, or whether or not this was a national security cancer, and in our studies we've taken a look at how the national security establishment had perfected as early as 1954. A means of giving people cancer as a means of assassination. We'll never know, but Penny Lernoux, the author of this book, left us last year at the age of 49. However, she left us. She also left us the book, In Banks We Trust, subtitled Bankers and Their Close Associates, the CIA, the Mafia, Drug Traders, Dictators, Politicians in the Vatican, and In Banks We Trust by Penny Lernoux, copyright 1984 by the Anchor Press, Doubleday. And we're going to take a look now at Paul Helliwell at the Castle Bank in the Bahamas, and in turn, this will serve as sort of a microcosm to take a look at the development of the relationship between organized crime, the U.S. intelligence agencies, and in turn, how that particular relationship has led to the drug trade and involvement of the U.S. as an official institution in the drug trade. Once again, we're going to be listening to some material here from In Banks We Trust by Penny Lernoux, Anchor Press Doubleday hardcover edition, copyright 1984, and in Chapter 5 we find an excellent accounting of the career of Paul Helliwell and the Castle Bank. The late Penny Lernoux writes as follows. Chapter 5, by the way, is headlined, Florida's Bent Bankers, the CIA, Mobsters in Offshore Havens, a fitting background to the activities we're looking at in connection with the CIA-SNL connection here. Like Frank Nugan, Miami lawyer Paul E. Helliwell used banks. By the way, before I begin this, in Radio Free America 25, we went into the Nugan Hand Bank. That's the reference here to Frank Nugan. The Nugan Hand Bank was a combined CIA naval intelligence operation, which was used for a variety of things, financing covert operations, arms deals. The drug trade was heavily involved with the finances of the Nugan Hand Bank. It figured prominently in connection with Messrs. Edwin Wilson, among others. Many of the key people in the Iran-Contra scandal were involved also in one capacity or another with the Nugan Hand Bank, as we looked at in Radio Free America 29. But Radio Free America 25 contains a nice section about the Nugan Hand Bank, also taken from In Banks We Trust by Penny Lernoux. So that's the Nugan reference here. Beginning again, Chapter 5 of In Banks We Trust. Like Frank Nugan, Miami lawyer Paul E. Helliwell used banks to serve his CIA drug connections in Southeast Asia. But Helliwell was far more experienced in the politics of drugs, with a sharply honed intellect and instinct for survival the younger man lacked. In a long career that embraced the opium trade in China, CIA covert work in Florida, and mob-connected schemes in the Caribbean, Helliwell faltered only once when one of his CIA banks ran afoul of the Internal Revenue Service. Until its demise in 1977, his Castle Bank in the Bahamas formed a Caribbean bridge between the poppy fields of Thailand and organized crime in the United States. A spook's spook. Helliwell also proved a master manipulator of Caribbean bank havens and Panamanian shell companies in his dual role as CIA paymaster and mobster's counselor. Too nimble an operator ever to get caught, he died a natural death at the age of 64, a wealthy and respected member of the Miami business community. Hallowell's career in intelligence and drugs dated to World War II when he served as Chief of Special Intelligence in China for the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS. When the latter was reorganized as the CIA, he was in on the ground floor. He was Colonel Hallowell in those days, and Howard Hunt of Watergate fame was one of his agents. CIA sources claimed that in Asia, Hallowell frequently bought information with 5-pound shipments of opium, 3 sticky brown bars, according to one source, and after the war, he returned to his native Florida, where he helped set up and run Sea Supply Incorporated, a CIA front in Miami. Until 1961, when the CIA's Cuban operations diverted Hallowell's attention, Sea Supply sent huge amounts of weapons and equipment to opium-smuggling nationalist Chinese troops in Burma and to Thailand's police, who were also involved in the opium trade. In those years, Hallowell was also the Thai consul in Miami. The consulate operated out of his offices, and it registered... The consulate operated out of his offices. Its registered foreign lobbyist was Washington lawyer James Rowe. Until 1961, when the CIA's Cuban operations diverted Hallowell's attention, Sea Supply sent huge amounts of weapons and equipment to opium-smuggling nationalist Chinese troops in Burma and to Thailand's police, who were also involved in the opium trade. In those years, Hallowell was also the Thai consul in Miami. The consulate operated out of his offices. Its registered foreign lobbyist was Washington lawyer James Rowe. And Rowe's partner was the more powerful lobbyist Tommy the Cork Corcoran, who at United Fruit's behest had helped trigger the CIA's overthrow of the Arbenz government in Guatemala. Corcoran also represented Chiang Kai-shek's relatives and the Civil Air Transport, a CIA front that, like Sea Supply, was involved in the Asian opium trade. At the time Hallowell employed Rowe, he and Corcoran were two of the closest advisors to Lyndon Baines Johnson, the rapidly rising Senate Majority Leader. Narcotics have often been used as a political weapon, one of the best-known examples being General Chiang Kai-shek's regime in China before World War II. Thailand's government in the 1950s also depended on the opium trade to finance political and intelligence activities. It came to power through the arms provided by Hallowell's Sea Supply. An old China hand, Hallowell met many of the principals in the notorious China lobby. Back in Florida, he arranged a secret account for Chiang Kai-shek's relatives at one of his Caribbean shell banks, and rich Thais and other Asians invested in Florida land development companies associated with Hallowell. These banks and real estate schemes represented the other part of the heroin puzzle described in the previous chapter. During World War II, heroin addiction dropped dramatically, not only because supplies were cut off, but also because the crime syndicates were in disarray. 5 years before the United States entered the war, organized crime was dealt a serious blow with the arrest and conviction of the legendary Salvatore Lucania, known to the world as Charles Lucky Luciano. Charming and strikingly handsome, Luciano ranks as one of the most brilliant criminal executives of the century. It was due to his efforts that the old mafia was reorganized and modernized as 24 family cartels. Luciano also formed an alliance between the mafia and the Jewish gangs of Meyer Lansky, who became Luciano's lieutenant and later the financial genius of organized crime. With the end of Prohibition in sight, Luciano turned to heroin, which offered an attractive substitute for liquor. His agents developed an efficient supply network in China, where Chiang Kai-shek had come to power with the help of the Shanghai heroin cartel. But in 1936, Thomas Dewey's organized crime investigators put Luciano behind bars, removing the underworld's most influential mediator from active leadership. At the same time that Dewey was racket-busting, Benito Mussolini was waging a vicious vendetta against the mafia, which had insulted him during a state visit to Western Sicily. The outraged dictator responded by unleashing a reign of terror that nearly destroyed the mafia. But World War II gave American and Italian mobsters a new lease on life, thanks to a cynical alliance between the U.S. government and organized crime that involved the intelligence community in the politics of drugs. Apprehensive that Nazi saboteurs might be infiltrating the docks and shipyards of the East Coast, U.S. naval intelligence officers struck a bargain whereby Lansky, then Luciano's lieutenant, would provide mafia henchmen to patrol the waterfront in exchange for the promise of Luciano's release from prison at the end of the war. Shortly after VE Day, New York's Governor Dewey, who had made his reputation by putting Luciano behind bars, signed the parole papers. The Mafia had also made a deal known as Operation Underworld with the OSS to provide gangland assistance for the Allied armies when they landed in Sicily. Later, when he was deported to Sicily, leaving Lansky to look after the shop in the United States, Luciano expanded the syndicate's overseas connections with more than a little help from his friends in the OSS, now called the CIA. When communist waterfront strikers shut down Marseille in 1947, thus closing a major French port to American shipping, the CIA called on Luciano. He furnished hitmen, the CIA supplied money and weapons. After several murders, the docks were reopened for American shippers and the syndicate's heroin smugglers. To prevent further strikes, the CIA provided support and money for former Nazi collaborators in the post-war unions of France. When the syndicate later moved into Southeast Asia's Golden Triangle, the CIA was again accommodating. Ever zealous to fight communism, the agency shipped cash and munitions to Laotian, nationalist Chinese, and Thai mercenaries who were also opium growers employed in the syndicate's heroin trade. CIA planes provided safe passage for the first leg of the drug's journey to the ghettos of the United States. In later years, the CIA was to employ Cuban exiles in the South American cocaine and marijuana trade as informants and hitmen for covert operations in Latin America. The end result of such activities was that the CIA became a crucial middleman for drug producers and organized crime. Paul Helliwell moved briskly among such alliances. A banker lawyer, he frequently shifted directions using the same banks to launder funds for the CIA and hide phony tax schemes for politically prominent Asians and wealthy American gangsters. He also promoted land rackets and Caribbean gambling schemes associated with Meyer Lansky. Taken together, these seemingly disparate interests form the three parts of the heroin story: Southeast Asian suppliers, the CIA, and the Mafia. By bringing them together in the same bank or business deals, Helliwell proved himself the consummate spy, a man whose career mirrored the CIA's own history of involvement with drugs and organized crime. Now, we're going to skip down here in Penny Lernew's account. All of this information here, it's somewhat telescoped, is covered in Radio Free America number 24. That's in our archives. And again, some of the continuations of these links, such as the Nugan Hand Bank, in subsequent Radio Free America shows. Now, the two individuals here, Chesler and Groves, are two organized crime associates from Florida, and those are the two individuals mentioned in the passage here, because we're going to skip some. To complicate the picture even more, Chesler and Groves were partners in a gambling venture with Resorts International through a Grand Bahamian company whose counsel was the law firm of Helliwell, Melrose, and DeWolf. A controversial gambling concern with casinos in the Bahamas and Atlantic City, Resorts was linked to a squadron of notorious people from Eddie Cellini, a brother of a top Lansky lieutenant, to Robert Vesco, Howard Hughes, B.B. Rebozo, and Richard Nixon. And in a footnote to that passage, Resorts management has denied allegations that the corporation had CIA links in its earlier incarnation as the Mary Carter Paint Company. However, G.G. Mahon, M-A-H-O-N, an associate editor at Barron's Financial Weekly and the author of a book about Resorts International, said that the CIA had not responded to her two-year-old request for information on Resorts under the Freedom of Information Act. Quote, "They admit they have the files on Mary Carter Resorts, but to date have found excuses not to produce them." By the way, G.G. Mahon's book is called The Company That Bought the Boardwalk, Random House, 1980. Continuing with Penny Lernew's text here, Helliwell was a busy man. In addition to his CIA fronts and Caribbean projects, he secretly purchased 27,000 acres of Central Florida real estate for Walt Disney as the future site of Disney World. Other clients were more questionable, one of them being a group of insurance companies run by C.V. Starr, a former subordinate of Helliwell in the OSS China section. Senate hearings found that the insurance companies received contracts from the Teamsters leader, Jimmy Hoffa, and employed agents from the underworld. Helliwell was also counsel to the Miami National Bank, an institution controlled by Lansky's buddies Lou Poehler and Sam Cohen, and used to launder casino schemes and other Lansky business through a Swiss bank. Miami National, in turn, was connected to a Florida real estate development company owned by Groves through interlocking directorates. It was a cozy club in Miami, and nothing better demonstrated the congeniality of political and criminal interests than Helliwell's Castle and Trust, a Bahamian shell bank that specialized in tax shelters for America's famous and infamous. A brilliant tax lawyer, Helliwell set up Castle to handle $250 million in foreign trusts for more than 300 prominent Americans and corporations. He acted as counsel to the bank along with another tax lawyer of controversial repute, Burton W. Cantor of Chicago. Helliwell's Bank of Pelene served as Castle's correspondent bank in Miami, and Castle was a conduit for money from Intercontinental Diversified Corporation. So again, that in a nutshell, covering in a relatively superficial fashion, the origins of the association between the United States intelligence and organized crime. It began as an anti-fascist effort, at least nominally, to help secure the East Coast docks from Axis saboteur. Then Luciano's forces were instrumental in helping the U.S. forces land in Sicily. Then in turn, the partnership lasted into the Cold War, where the organized crime syndicates both in Sicily and Marseille served as anti-communist cadre for the CIA and other elements of U.S. intelligence, and that in turn helped them to secure a blind official eye to their dope smuggling activities. The muscle that they used in their anti-communist efforts also helped them. The power that they got helped secure their control of the drug trade as well. Radio Free America number 24, and in turn, information developed primarily from the politics of heroin in Southeast Asia by Alfred W. McCoy. Also, the book The Great Heroin Coup by Henrik Kruger to a certain extent. Radio Free America 24, the archive show in question. We're now going to take a musical break, and then we're going to come back with some more current information, in which basically we're going to ask if, in fact, the Nugan Hand Bank succeeded the Castle Bank when, in turn, Nugan Hand went down, did perhaps some of these savings and loan institutions serve in the same capacity. Food for thought, grounds for further research, more after some music. Now, we've been taking a look at connections between Lawrence Freeman, a convicted money launderer and possible CIA operative, his connections not only to the failures of the Vision Bank, owned by reputed CIA operative Frank Corson, but also Hill Financial in Pennsylvania, and his connections to a deal that brought those banks down, also his connections to Paul Helliwell, veteran OSS operative and CIA operative, and also his connections to Santos Traficante Jr. Then we took a look at Paul Helliwell and some information from In Banks We Trust by Penny Lernew, and we took a look at the career of Paul Helliwell as a microcosm, and in particular as a vehicle for taking a look at the historical formation of the links between organized crime and the intelligence community and the drug traffic. And that's basically what we have been looking at in the broadcast so far. Now, we're going to review some information from the previous installment of the CIA connection to the SNL crisis, and specifically we're going to take a look at some of the many connections of the Southmark Corporation. Now, we're going to take a look at Southmark, its connections to Mario Renda, one of the people we looked at in connection with the constellation of airline companies or aircraft companies run by Farhad Azima, which we have called Air Azima for purposes here. And we're going to take a look at the Southmark Corporation and its links to, among others, Mario Renda, as I said, and the Centennial Mario Renda in turn and his connections to the Centennial savings and loan failure. That in turn is going to lead us into a discussion of the Drug Tug case, one of the most important connections to the CIA savings and loan crisis, and the CIA connection to the savings and loan crisis, and the Drug Tug case, of course, something we've been looking at for a long, long time here on One Step Beyond. Now, for the next a number of installments here, we're going to be taking a look at a book called Inside Job, America's Savings, subtitled The Looting of America's Savings and Loans. That's tri-authored by Stephen Pizzo, P-I-Z-Z-O, and Mary Fricker is one of the other authors, F-R-I-C-K-E-R. And the third author is Paul Muolo, M-U-O-L-O. And that's the book that we're going to be looking at for the next spot is this. I wanted to look at my list of pages here. A bit of over-the-counter radio. The next, several installments, the next several passages here are going to come from the book Inside Job. Now, the book was published in hardcover by McGraw-Hill, copyright 1989. And again, with the dizzying connections of the CIA savings and loan connection here, the dizzying array of people and elements that crop up in connection with it, Southmark is one of the names which is not only the most important, but which will also serve to help us remember some of these connections. It's sort of a memory aid as well as one of the key players in the CIA connection to the SNL crisis. Now, again, inside job, the looting of America's savings and loans. Stephen Pizzo, Mary Fricker, F-R-I-C-K-E-R, and Paul Muolo, M-U-O-L-O, hardcover edition, McGraw-Hill, 1989. And we're going to take a look now at the Southmark Corporation, and specifically we're going to take a look at Southmark's connections to Henry K. Beebe, one of the key players in the Silverado orbit that we looked at in our last installment in the article from the Houston Post of March 11th of 1990. And now we're going to take a look at the connection between Southmark and between some of the main names in the go-go financing of the 1980s, names like Drexel Burnham Lambert, its junk king Michael Milken. Both of their operations involved with Southmark, Milken a close friend and as well as business associate of Southmark chairman Gene Phillips here. And Mario Renda we'll see also in connection with the Southmark Corporation. Now it appears that Southmark, whether organized crime, intelligence, or both, and there are indications that it may be both, frequently steps in to pick up the assets of some of the failed SNL debacles here. It's sort of a cleanup hitter for many of these situations. And of Southmark, its relationship with Henry K. Beebe and a bunch of other people, the tri-authors Pizzo, Fricker, and Muolo write as follows in Inside Job. If you're interested in Beebe, you should be interested in Southmark, a source told us one day. Have you seen the transcripts of Southmark's casino licensing hearings in Las Vegas? I think you'd find them interesting. We had found this Dallas-based company in some of our other thrift investigations. Now, we were to learn that Southmark had made nearly $30 million in loans to Beebe and Beebe-related companies after his conviction. Altogether, Southmark conducted nearly $90 million in business deals with Beebe. Some of the business was paid for in Southmark stock. The company's 1985 10-K showed that Herman Beebe held nearly 62% of Southmark's Series E preferred stock. FSLIC later charged that Beebe used some of that stock to pay off a loan he had at Edmund Reggie's Acadia Savings and Loan. Southmark was a Forbes 500 company based in Dallas and run by Gene Phillips, a calculating, tough negotiator described by competitors as one of the most astute real estate men in the country. Skipping down, After thrifts were deregulated, Phillips hurriedly searched for one to finance his acquisitions. In 1983, Southmark acquired San Jacinto Savings, and for 3 years, the SNL was under Phillips' control. But in 1986, worried regulators ordered the SNL to stop funding Southmark's purchases, and Phillips had to rely on another favored way to raise cash. That year, he raised $950 million through Drexel Burnham Lambert. In fact, much of Southmark's explosion in assets, according to SEC filings, were financed by junk bonds marketed for Phillips by his close friend Michael Milken, Drexel Burnham Lambert's junk bond king. And again here, I think noting the relationships between some of the key names in the go-go financing of the 1980s and this organized crime intelligence milieu we're looking at in connection with the savings and loan crisis, it might be worth looking at the relationship here between Southmark's Gene Phillips and Michael Milken of Drexel Burnham Lambert.